We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and we are at the law firm of Tarlow, Breed, Hart, and Rogers all week long in the lovely Prudential Center, Boston, Massachusetts. My co-host for this segment, again, Mark Furman, our litigation and business reporter. Thank you, Mark.
Hi there, Jeffrey. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Our next guest, a friend of yours professionally, Sandy Lundy of Tarlow Breed. And we're going to talk about appeals today.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Thank
how
you.
Are you?
Good. Good.
So, Sandy, you know, cases go on and most of them settle, and then some of them don't settle, and you end up with trials, and somebody wins, and somebody loses, maybe both parties lose, and maybe both parties are unhappy, and one or both parties appeal. And you handle appeals, right?
I do. I spent 12 years as a senior attorney at the Supreme Judicial Court, in which we read hundreds and hundreds of appellate briefs, drafted opinions, and very familiar with the appellate process. And now I do that at Tarlow.
And the Supreme Judicial Court, just so everybody knows, is the highest state court in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Yes.
And could you briefly describe, you know, what the process is after we have a trial decision and then leading to a decision by the appellate courts?
Sure. One thing that people often confuse appeals with trials, so I just want to start out by talking about the difference. At the appellate process, there are no witnesses. There's not any testimony that gets put in. There are no new documents. There's no new evidence. All you do is present a panel of judges. Now, so there's not just one judge. There are a panel of judges. You present them with the record of what happened at trial. And you say to the justices, based on the record, there was a fundamental mistake in the trial that affected the outcome of the trial. We want this reviewing court to look at the record and to correct the mistake.
So so in Massachusetts, there are two different appellate courts, right? The appeals court, which is everybody has a right to appeal to.
Right.
And then the Supreme Judicial Court, which selects the cases that it wishes to hear, like the United States Supreme Court.
Yes, that's correct. The appeals court, which has been in operation, created in the early 70s, is the general court of appeals. Everybody gets to go there. The Supreme Judicial Court can sometimes take a case right out of the appeals court and say, we want to hear it. We know it's going to get to us eventually. We want to hear it. We're taking it directly. Or sometimes people are dissatisfied with what the appeals court did, and they petition the justices, and they say, we want you to look at this again, and the justices agree to look at it. It's a long process. It takes a long time.
And if you're the party appealing, in an appeal, you have an uphill battle, right?
Yes, you do. There are judges, especially if you're arguing that the judge made a mistake in a factual finding, because judges are given broad deference to make findings of fact. And the theory is the judge was there, the judge saw the witnesses, the judge looked at the facial expression of the witnesses, looked at the gestures of the witnesses. All we have is this bland transcript. We're going to give the judge the benefit of the doubt in terms of the factual findings. On a question of law, you know, was this really a contract or not? Was this, is this illegal? That the court will look at that anew, but it'll be based on the evidence.
Right. So I think of it a little bit as, let's say there's a trial at which one witness says the light was green and the other another witness says the light was red, and that liability in the case is determined on that. If a jury or a judge, however the case was tried, decides the light was red, the light was red for purposes of appeal. You can't argue, well, it really was green. That is conclusively determined. That's a fact decision that is based on credibility, and it's and so that's final. And even if three people said it was green and one person said it was red, the fact finder makes the judgment about whether it's green or red, depending on their perception of credibility.
That's right. And the only way you would have a factual finding like that overturned is if everybody testified that it was green and the judge found, just because the judge believed it, that it was red with no evidence. And that's called an abuse of discretion. So it has to be so extraordinary that it's out of the realm of what's reasonable.
But legal questions, and we deal with that all the time, are they're subject to review without any deference, as you point out.
Right. The theory is that we're at least as knowledgeable about the law as the trial court, and we can make that decision on our own.
And reasonable minds can differ about what the law is.
That's right. That's right.
And we see that all the time, as I frequently say on the show, in the opinions of the United States Supreme Court that get decided 5-4, 4-4, 5-3. You have very bright judges who just view the law very differently.
Right. And you know, when you get to the appellate level, they're also looking at different things than a trial court may be looking at. I know from working at the Supreme Judicial Court that when that court, our highest court, gets an appeal, they're looking at, well, what's the next case going to be? If we decide it this way, how is the law going to develop? If we decide it that way, how is the law going to develop? So they're looking at a much more global issue than the trial court may be looking at. You know, what are the broad policy implications of deciding one way or the other? And again, reasonable minds can and do differ.
I am sorry to interrupt probably a much more intelligent conversation than I'm going to make this, but I'm still hung up on what you said, Mark, and I don't understand why. You need to explain it to me. If jurors decide that a red light is green, or vice versa, if a red light is green, then from then on, they're dealing with a green light. So if they've all made a mistake, there's no way to sort of turn back the clock?
As long as there was any evidence that it was green, it's something that gets conclusively decided at trial.
So the platform for discussion changes regardless?
Yes. We're now focusing more on legal errors. So I'll give you an example of a legal error and how it applies to how the law evolves over time. So, you know, our law has been evolving for hundreds of years. So in the old days, there was a rule that if you were liable for breaching a contract and you died, your estate would be liable for your contractual obligation. However, if you were liable for a tort, negligence, something that caused personal injury, that did not survive your death. So the plaintiff, in effect, loses his or her rights. Now, over the decades, there has been a movement away from that principle because it seems unfair to the victim. And so the law evolves, and now more and more cases survive, although it's still frequently litigated, and I've argued in the Supreme Judicial Court on one of these cases around what survives and what doesn't survive. So the appellate judges, they're thinking of policy, you know, where the law is, and maybe for things that are unsettled, what direction should the law be moving in? And you know, some issues, you know, issues of constitutional law, you know, really the Supreme Judicial Court is there to decide those kinds of questions under the Massachusetts Constitution.
Right. And that's one of the reasons to appeal is the trial judge has to do has to follow the law. The judge can't say, well, I think this law is outmoded and it should be something else. But one of the reasons to appeal is if you think the law really is outmoded and you can make that case, you might take it up to appeal and the judges might agree with you. You might say, and that's exactly what happened in the Goodrich same-sex marriage case. The trial judge had to do what the state of the law was at the time, and the Supreme Judicial Court said, no, you know, we have a different view. We think it's about time that, you know, we look at the Constitution and interpret it more broadly.
And one of the hard things, I think, for lawyers is figuring out when it makes sense to appeal.
Right.
It is always an uphill battle, but you have situations where, you know, you're at the trial court, there's been one or two decisions from the appeals court that are adverse to your client, but the Supreme Judicial Court, the highest court, hasn't spoken. And you think there's a strong argument why you think the Supreme Judicial Court may take a different view. So there you are, you lost the case in the Superior Court, you know you're going to lose the case in the appeals court, but you still think that you could win the case if the Supreme Judicial Court took the case. And, you know, you're making judgments about what, in the case of the Supreme Judicial Court, seven judges who haven't spoken on a particular issue would, you're trying to predict the likelihood that they would find the law favorable to your client. And because the process is expensive, it's very time-consuming and expensive, they're difficult choices to make. And it's important for lawyers and clients to really talk through carefully the pluses and the minuses of appeals. You know, if somebody loses a case badly, the immediate gut reaction would, well, let's appeal, and that's just entirely natural. But you have to consider that is there a possibility it could get worse on appeal? Will the other side appeal? What's the cost of the appeal? And if you've been found liable for money damages under Massachusetts law, the amount that you've been found liable is subject to interest at the rate of 12% per year, which is an extraordinarily high interest rate. For some cases, you can be liable for the other side's attorney's fees as well.
Right.
So, you know, there's risk and there's reward and there's expense, and you really have to talk through it in a somewhat dispassionate way. You have 30 days in general from an adverse judgment to take an appeal. That gives you some time to, you know, to think about it. So, you know, and the majority of cases, I'd say the significant majority of cases are affirmed on appeal. And I've argued two cases this year in the appeals court. Both were affirmed, the decision of the trial court. Not unusual, but it's not true in every case.
It's not true in every case, and there are a couple of things to think about. First of all, and that's why people use litigators who've argued on appeal, because so much depends on how you identify an issue, because there's mistakes in every single trial. It's impossible to have even a three-hour trial without mistakes. The issue is how egregious was the mistake? Did it really affect the outcome? The other thing about appeals is you can bring friends along. They're called amicus or amici. You can have organizations, industry groups, individuals, professors write briefs to the court in support of your position. So if you really do believe and your industry believes that it's time for a certain law to change for a certain reason, you can bring these fellows along with you to write friend of the court briefs, which
intellectual
is
lobbying.
Yeah. And that's a very powerful resource you have on appeal.
Clearly, again, a subject that cannot be done in the glib confines of a radio interview, and I apologize for that because I know that Mark was getting himself in position for his next question. But we have to, maybe we'll just have to have you back again, Sandy.
Well, it's great.
But if somebody has to find you, how would they find you?
I am at Tarlo Breed Hart & Rogers, 101 Huntington Avenue in Boston, and the email is slundy, L-U-N-D-Y, at tbhr-law.com, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about appeals.
Great.
Thanks, Sandy.
Okay.
Thanks for being on the show today. Thanks to our friends at Tarlo Breed Hart & Rogers. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.